The Nature Stories podcast, where people and place intersect.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
I'm Samantha Brown. Welcome back to the Nature Stories podcast, where we've been listening to pieces from Stories from the Heart of the Land, a public radio series which considers the connection between people and the natural world. This podcast is curated by Atlantic Public Media in collaboration with the Nature Conservancy and the Public Radio Exchange. Here's Stories from the Heart of the Land host, Jay Allison.
John Miller was an East Coast college kid when he first went to work in the Uinta Mountains in northeastern Utah. For two summers, he helped build a trail. It was a short trail, just 7 miles long, and it led to a dam that was also being built, one of a network of dams and reservoirs to bring the water out of Utah's mountains to the farms and suburbs below. John left before the dam was finished. He never hiked the trail end to end, and he never saw the lake. Until recently, he took his son, Will, with him.
For the last 20 years, I've been haunted by this image from my last day of work, riding out of the mountains in a string of horses, looking down at what had been a favorite place, a dark valley of bogs and willows, but which was now bare and red, with a forest cut back like you'd shave an animal for an operation. And me, young and strong, but slumped on my horse, feeling somehow complicit. Going back is a way to face all that, to hike the trail, to see the lake, to show my son what I did when I was just a little older than he is now.
We are at the head of the South Fork Trail. My boy Will is going to help me get my pack on because it's big and heavy, and he's big and heavy.
I've been telling Will not to expect too much. The trail's been officially abandoned for years. It's not even on the Forest Service map. I had to draw it in with a Sharpie. But it's still here.
I can't tell you how good it feels to see this trail in such nice shape. A part of me was hoping that this was just going to disappear into the landscape, be eaten up. But, boy, another part of me looks at this and says, "Ooh, look what we did."
Of course, I've spoken too soon.
First sign of trouble.
About a half an hour in, there's a tree across the path.
This guy, Will, is a big, strong, curly-headed, blonde guy. And he is right now single-handedly muscling a 20-foot-tall dead tree off the trail. All right, my man, good work. There's your walking stick. I thought we were all through with uphill. The last little stretch of trail had cairns marking the way through this open wood at the top of a shoulder of this ridge, and I was just thinking how the ideal trail would be just cairns, wouldn't it? Then if you ever decide you don't want the trail there anymore, all you got to do is come through and kick the stones over. How about that for some philosophy, my son?
It's very deep.
We cross over to the other side of the ridge.
I think we're over, right?
From here, it's all downhill to where the lake's supposed to be.
We're going through a section of trail right here where there are trees down in every which direction. I have to say, I kind of like seeing this. The first half of the trail was in great condition, which was heartening and played to my ego, I have to admit. But this latter half is in really rough shape.
Where is the trail?
I think it just keeps going over this way.
Or at least that's what I thought. We spend a fair chunk of the next 3 hours completely lost trying to find the trail.
That's it. That looks good.
We're looking for the place where our trail joins the one to the lake.
You're at the junction? I'm looking for this tree, and I think I found it. Oh, man. There's a aspen tree just off the trail with completely unintelligible carvings in it, but my crew and I all carved our names into it. It is, I swear, I promise, the only time in my entire life that I've carved my initials into a tree. Will, come here. Come on, look at this tree.
The plan is to spend a night near the junction, then hike the mile or so to the lake tomorrow morning. We set up camp in a little hollow and light a fire. I take out a harmonica and play a couple of tunes.
For the longest time, I wanted to come back to this place and see what I had helped build and also confront this other big thing that I was really somehow marginally involved with, this lake and dam. It's this very complicated and confusing question of, when we go through our lives, what do we leave behind, and what do we leave behind for other people as well? I don't know if you're 15, if that's the sort of thing you would ever think about.
If you look around, you leave everything behind. The world would not look the same if you weren't there.
What do you mean?
Just humans in general leave a very permanent footprint from everything they do, from the trash you drop in the street to the dam you put up in the river in the middle of Utah.
I've been wrestling with the footprint question for as long as I can remember. I wasn't that much older than Will when I worked as a ranger up in the high country. My job was to enforce what they called the wilderness ethic, the whole point being leave no footprint. Back then, I thought that would be a great way to try to live my life. Now that I'm older, I'm not so sure. If no one was willing to leave a footprint, we wouldn't have the Parthenon or Machu Picchu or the Golden Gate Bridge. So maybe Will's right. Maybe leaving footprints is just what people do. Then the question is whether they're good footprints or bad ones. But how on earth do you judge that?
Day 2 morning. We're in an open wood. And here is the first glimpse of the Upper Stillwater Reservoir. Through the trees I can see blue, lake blue. I'm just breaking through the last of the trees. Over some driftwoody stuff. You know, this is what I came this whole distance to see, this lake. And I was concerned that when I got to the edge of this lake that I would think it was beautiful and that I would be all confused about what's right and what's wrong and what people should be doing and when people should just be leaving things alone. The blue of the lake is beautiful, but the rest of it isn't.
And it's true, it isn't beautiful, at least not in late summer when the water level's down. The whole upper part is mud, with rotten tree stumps and piles of rocks. The dam itself is just a huge concrete wall. It looks like a construction site, or a giant muddy footprint, which I guess is partly mine. I live at the edge of a little gorge in upstate New York. Kids come from all over the county to jump off the cliff behind our house. Just a few yards downstream, the creek becomes a lake, created by a dam that was built in the 1830s. There's an old stone bridge at one end and a trail around the edge. It's a beautiful place to be. Standing by the artificial lake behind my house makes me happy. Standing by the artificial lake in Utah felt like a kick in the gut. Ever since I got back, I've been trying to make sense of that. Judging your footprints ought to be hard. You take their impact, their utility, and your own gut reaction, and you try to work out a formula that makes sense in that particular place at that particular time. It's that struggle, I think, that uncertainty that keeps you from strapping on your boots and going out into the world and stomping all over everything and never looking back.
John Miller at his home in Ithaca, New York. John produced that piece for Atlantic Public Media's series Stories from the Heart of the Land. The music was composed and performed by Bill Frizzell. The Nature Stories podcast is produced with support from the Nature Conservancy, committed to protecting nature and preserving life. If you'd like to find out more information on the series or the podcast, go to nature.org/stories. And join me next week for a portrait of nature writer Barry Lopez and his home ground in Oregon. From Woods Hole, Massachusetts, I'm Samantha Brown.